Okay, let's unpack this. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today is a little bit different.
Very different.
Usually we take this, wide-angle lens on a topic, looking at the philosophy or the big picture. But today we are on a mission. We are going full exam cram mode.
We certainly are. We're tackling the Microsoft AB730. That's the official designation for the AI Business Professional Certification. And looking at the stack of notes and, beta tester feedback we have here, this isn't just a casual chat. This is a survival guide.
Exactly. I want to set the scene for you right now. If you're listening to this, I'm picturing you in one of two very specific scenarios. You might be in your car, white-knuckling the steering wheel, driving to the testing center right this
I
second.
can feel the anxiety.
Or maybe you've got 20 minutes on the treadmill, or you're on your commute, and your exam is scheduled for tomorrow morning. You need the high-yield stuff.
You need the signal, not the noise. You need to know what's going to be on that screen, and I think more importantly, what's designed to trip you up.
That is the vibe today. Efficiency, clarity, and dodging those gotcha questions. We have pulled together everything official, Microsoft learning paths, feedback from people who just sat the beta, expert breakdowns, and we've distilled it into this conversation. This is your ultimate cheat sheet.
And before we even get into the content, we have to talk about the stakes.
Yeah.
Because the title of this exam is Business Professional. It sounds
Nice.
nice.
It sounds approachable,
It
right?
does. It sounds like, hey, I use Outlook. I know how to write an email. I'm a professional. I'll be fine.
Right. And you don't need to code, which is what everyone says.
Correct.
I
And the
hear.
sources confirm that. This is not a coding exam. You do not need to know C Sharp. You do not need to know how to configure an API endpoint in Azure. You don't need to be a data
Which
scientist.
is comforting. That's usually the big barrier to entry for these things.
It is comforting, but, and this is a massive but that we need to underline and highlight, do not let that lull you into a false sense of security. We've gone through feedback from several sources, and the consensus is this exam is surprisingly difficult.
More than you'd think.
In fact, some are saying it's harder than the admin exam, the AB 900.
Wait, pause right there. Harder than the administrator exam. How is that even possible? The admin one is supposed to be the technical one.
It comes down to the nature of the questions. The admin exam tests broad concepts, configurations. This exam, the AB 730, it tests your nitpicky visual memory of the user interface.
So it's not enough to know that Copilot can build an agent.
No.
You need to know exactly which tab to click to start that process.
Precisely. You need to know the specific order of operations. You need to know the names of the buttons. Is it settings? Is it parameters? Is it configuration? If you know the exact word, you're going to lose points.
That brings us to a concept one of our sources called the autopilot trap. I loved this phrase because I think I'm guilty of it.
Oh, we all are. The autopilot trap is the danger of being an experienced user. If you use Copilot in Teams every single day, you stop reading the interface. You just, rely on muscle memory.
You click the little icon in the corner or the three dots.
Right.
I don't know what the button is called, I just know where it lives.
Exactly. But on the exam, you don't have that live screen in front of you. You have a multiple choice question or maybe a screenshot. And if you've been running on autopilot, you might realize you don't actually know the formal vocabulary of the tool you use daily.
That's genuinely terrifying. It means being a power user could actually work against you if you aren't careful.
It can.
Yeah.
But that's why we're here. We're going to visualize this together. We've got a roadmap for this deep dive, and we're breaking it down into three main pillars.
Let's map it out. What are we covering?
Pillar one is fundamentals. We have to start with the plumbing, how the AI actually works, the data flow, the architecture, and the responsible AI principles. If you don't get the engine, you can't answer the why questions.
Okay, sounds critical.
Pillar two is capabilities. This is the real meat of the exam. This is the green zone versus the red zone, what Copilot can do, and critically, what it cannot do.
The red zone. I have a feeling that's where all the trick questions live.
They absolutely do. And finally, pillar three is experiences. We're going to untangle that terminology soup. Chats versus pages versus notebooks versus
I
agents.
still get pages and notebooks mixed up, so I'm definitely looking forward to that section.
We will sort it out, I promise.
All right, let's jump straight into section one, the exam reality check. Let's talk logistics. What are you physically walking into when you sit down at that computer?
Speed. Speed is the name of the game. Based on the beta reports, you have roughly 45 minutes to answer between 40 and 60 questions.
Whoa, 45 minutes. That's barely a minute per question.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
It is a sprint. You do not have time to sit and ponder the philosophy of it all. You need to read, decide, and click. You'll see multiple choice, you'll see drag and drop, yes, no, and scenario-based questions.
Are there those massive case studies, you know, the ones where you have to read 5 pages of a fake company's history before you can even answer question one?
Good news there. Unlike the expert-level architecture exams, sources say there are typically no long-form case studies.
Thank goodness.
But, and this is important, don't get complacent. The questions are short, but they are context-heavy. You have to read the business context in the snippet very carefully. A single word like external user or restricted folder changes the entire answer.
And regarding that nitpicky nature we mentioned, give me an example. What does a visual memory question actually look like?
Okay. Imagine a question that asks you to order the steps to create a custom agent. It's a drag and drop. You have 5 tiles. You have to put them in order. Name the agent. Add knowledge sources. Define instructions. Add starters. Publish.
Sure.
If you swap step 2 and step 3 because you've never actually paid attention to the flow wizard, you just get it wrong.
So for the visual learners out there, I want you to close your eyes. Well, not if you're driving, but visualize the screen. Picture the interface.
Exactly. One last level set on the audience. We said business professional.
Yeah.
Who exactly is this exam for?
Yeah, who should be taking this?
Think marketers, HR directors, operations managers, sales leads, project managers. If you're a developer, a data scientist, or a cloud architect listening to this, you are frankly overqualified in the wrong direction.
Overqualified in the wrong direction. That's a great line.
It's true, though. If you find yourself staring at a question and thinking about Python libraries or, I don't know, back-end SQL queries, you are overthinking it. You are missing the point. This exam is about applying the tool to business workflows to solve business problems. It's not about building the tool.
Got it. Coding is out. Business judgment is in. Let's move to pillar one, Copilot fundamentals and data flow. This feels like the bedrock.
It is. If you don't understand the journey of the data, you will fail the security questions. And the core concept here is the architecture. In the study guides, they often call this the graph journey.
The graph journey. I've seen the diagram. It's got arrows pointing everywhere. Can you walk us through it step by step? Let's make it concrete. I open Microsoft Teams and I type a prompt. Summarize this meeting. What happens next?
Okay, let's track the packet. Step one is the user prompt. You type your request and hit enter. But here's the key. It does not go straight to the AI brain yet. It doesn't go to the LLM immediately.
It makes a pit stop first.
A very, very important pit stop. Step two is pre-processing, also known in the exam material as grounding. Your prompt goes to the Microsoft graph.
We hear the graph all the time in the Microsoft world. Can we just define that clearly? What is the graph, really?
Think of the graph as the super index of your entire digital work life. It's a map. It knows who you are. It knows your emails, your files, your meetings, your org chart. It knows that when you say summarize this meeting, you are currently in a specific meeting ID with specific people.
So the graph gives the prompt context.
Exactly. It grounds your prompt in your reality. It adds relevant data. It says, hey, LLM, the user wants a summary of this specific transcript, and here's the context of who the user is.
So it turns a vague request into a specific data-rich package.
Correct. Then step three. That enriched, grounded prompt is finally sent to the LLM, the large language model.
The ChatGPT part.
Roughly speaking, yes. The LLM does its magic. It generates the summary. But wait, we aren't done. The LLM sends its response back, but you, the user, you do not see it yet.
It doesn't come straight back to me?
Nope. Step four is post-processing. The LLM's response goes back to the Microsoft graph.
Why does it go back? I mean, it's already written the summary. What's the delay for?
This is the safety valve.
Yeah.
This is the compliance check. It goes back for further grounding and security scanning. This is where the system asks itself, did the AI hallucinate something? Is there a security label on this data-like confidential that prevents me from showing it?
Ah, so it scrubs the response against my company's rules.
It's like a security guard checking the bag before it leaves the building.
Perfect analogy.
Only after that final check, in step five, do you see the response appear in your chat window?
So grounding happens twice.
It happens twice. That is a classic exam question. If they ask where grounding occurs, remember it's a sandwich. The LLM is the meat. Grounding is the bread on both sides.
That is going to stick in my head now. So in that whole flow, let's talk about the big elephant in the room. Security. Everyone is worried their company data is being used to train the public model.
And for the exam, you must be absolutely emphatic.
Yeah.
User data is never used to train the public foundation model.
Never.
Never. The exam will test this specifically. Your data stays within your tenant. It is your data. Microsoft doesn't peek at it to make the public ChatGPT smarter.
Okay. What about encryption?
Standard best practices. Data is encrypted in transit while it's moving through those steps we just discussed, and it's encrypted at rest when it's sitting on a server. But the most important security concept, the one that will help you answer maybe 20% of the questions on this test, is what we call the permissions mantra.
Which is?
Copilot does not bypass security.
Let's unpack that. What does it mean in practice?
It means Copilot only sees what you see. Copilot effectively wears your employee ID badge. If you, as a user, do not have permission to access the CEO's confidential strategy folder,
Copilot can't read it either.
Exactly. Even if you ask nicely. Even if you use some super prompt, if you can't double-click the file and open it yourself, Copilot acts like it doesn't exist. It respects all sensitivity labels and access control lists.
So if a scenario question asks, John asks Copilot to summarize a file in a restricted SharePoint folder he doesn't have access to, what happens?
The answer isn't Copilot summarizes it but hides sensitive info. The answer is Copilot says, I'm sorry, I can't find that file. It honors the deny.
That makes the security questions much, much easier. Just ask yourself, does the human have access? If no, the AI says no.
Precisely. Now let's slide from that into the ethical side, the 6 responsible AI principles.
These are on every Microsoft exam, aren't they?
They are. But the sources highlight a very specific trap here. People get confused between two of them, fairness versus inclusiveness.
They do sound similar. Be fair, be inclusive. In plain English, they're almost synonyms. What's the difference for the exam?
Okay, let's distinguish them sharply. Fairness is specifically about bias. It means the system should not treat you differently or make a worse decision because of your race, gender, background, or, you know, group membership.
Okay, so if a bank's AI denies a loan based on a zip code or a surname, that's a fairness issue.
Correct. It's about the decision or the output being unbiased. Now, inclusiveness is about accessibility. It means the tools should be usable by everyone, including those with disabilities.
No. Okay. That's a clear line.
So if the exam question talks about screen readers, contrast ratios for the visually impaired, captioning for the hearing impaired, or making sure the tool works for people with limited mobility, that's inclusiveness.
That is a vital distinction. Fairness equals no bias against groups. Inclusiveness equals accessibility for disabilities.
Right. The others are more straightforward, but you need to know them. Reliability and safety don't output harmful things. Privacy and security protect the data. Transparency. This is why Copilot gives citations. It shows its work.
And accountability. That's the last one.
That is the human in the loop. You are responsible for the output, not the AI. If Copilot writes a bad email and you send it, you send a bad email. You can't blame the bot.
Okay, we've got the plumbing and the principles. Let's move to pillar 2, prompting and management.
Prompt engineering. They don't expect you to be a wizard, but you need to know the anatomy of a perfect prompt. And according to Microsoft, there are 4 key ingredients.
Hit me.
Goal, context, source, and expectations.
Let's build one. Give me a bad prompt first.
A bad prompt would be, write an email about the project.
Terrible. So vague.
Now let's fix it with the ingredients. First, context. I am a project manager preparing for a steering committee. Second, goal. Draft an email updating the stakeholders on the timeline delay. Third, source. Reference the attached Excel schedule and the email from the vendor. And fourth, expectations. Keep the tone professional but urgent and use bullet points for the key dates.
That's a prompt that actually gives the AI everything it needs to succeed.
And the exam will likely do one of two things. They'll give you a bad prompt and ask what's missing. You'll have to look and say, oh, it didn't specify the source, or it didn't set the expectations for tone. Or they'll ask you to select the best prompt from a list of 4. Always pick the one that hits all 4 of those ingredients.
Now, speaking of sources, let's talk about technical references. There are 2 keys on your keyboard that are like magic wands in Copilot, the forward slash and the @@sat.
Yes. The forward slash is for referencing specific files.
Mm.
But here's the exam trap. In most Copilot experiences, it typically only sees cloud files.
So if I have a file sitting on my C drive, on my desktop.
Copilot can't see it with the slash. You have to upload it to OneDrive or SharePoint first.
Yeah.
That is a classic gotcha question. Why can't I find my file? The answer is usually it's local, not cloud.
And the @ symbol.
The @ symbol is for people, obviously, like tagging someone, but it is also used for agents. If you have a custom agent built, say, the HR policy bot, you call it into the conversation using @HR policy bot.
Okay, let's talk about memory. How long does Copilot really remember things?
There is a specific number you need to memorize, 90 days.
90 days. What's that for?
That's the default back-end retention policy. Conversations are retained on the back end for 90 days for compliance and e-discovery purposes, even if you, the user, manually delete them from your view.
Wait, so if I delete a chat, it's gone for me, but IT or legal can still pull it up for 90 days?
Correct. It's a safety net for the organization. Now, for memory, in the sense of the AI remembering you, standard Copilot chat has session-based memory. If you start a new chat, it generally doesn't know what you talked about last week.
Unless you use that specific Copilot memory feature in the settings?
Exactly. But generally, think of it as starting fresh. Which brings us to temporary chat.
Right. This is like incognito mode for Copilot.
It is. And it's different in two key ways. One, it ignores your stored memory preferences. It doesn't know your role or your preferences. And two, critically, it is not saved in the history sidebar. Once you close that browser tab, it is gone from your view.
So if I'm working on something super sensitive, or maybe just something silly like asking for a recipe, and I don't want it cluttering my work history, I use temporary chat.
That's the use case. And for the exam, knowing the difference between a standard chat, which is saved and personalized, and a temporary chat, which is ephemeral and not saved, is key.
Okay, let's move to pillar three, capabilities and limitations. The source has called this the red zone versus the green zone.
This is where you pass or fail.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this is the most important section. You need to know not just what Copilot can do, but what it cannot do.
We know the green zone stuff.
Right.
Summarizing, drafting text, catching up on emails, that's the easy part. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the red zone. Let's do a lightning round on app-specific quirks. I'll name the app, you tell me the trap.
Let's do it.
Microsoft Word.
Gotcha. Metadata and layout. Copilot is a master of content. It can rewrite your paragraphs, change the tone, change fonts, headings, all of that. It cannot change the page margins. It cannot switch the document from portrait to landscape. It can't change the file author metadata.
That is huge. So if the question asks, use Copilot to change the document layout to landscape, the answer is you can't do that.
Correct. It's a content drafter, not a layout engine. You have to do the formatting yourself.
Okay. Microsoft Teams. This is a big one.
Gotcha. Transcription. This is the number one failure point. For Copilot to work in a meeting, to summarize it, to tell you who said what, action items transcription or recording with transcription must be enabled.
And the timing on that matters.
Vitally important.
Yeah.
It has to be on during the meeting. If you have a meeting, you didn't record it, you didn't transcribe it, you cannot come back an hour later and ask Copilot for a summary. The data just doesn't exist for it to read.
It doesn't have ears unless you turn them on.
Exactly.
Outlook.
Gotcha. Scheduling. It can draft a beautiful email. It can summarize a massive thread. It cannot schedule an email to be sent later. You have to click that send later button yourself.
So it's a drafter, not a scheduler.
Not a scheduler, exactly.
Okay, Excel. This feels like the hardest one. People expect it to be magic.
It's the most strict. Gotcha. Pivot tables. At the time of the exam sources, Copilot can create formulas, it can analyze tables, it can make charts. It cannot generate a pivot table for you.
That seems like such a basic request for data analysis.
It does, but it's a specific limitation they call out. Also, Copilot in Excel really, really wants your data to be formatted as a formal table.
You mean insert table, not just a grid of numbers?
Yes. If you just have a range of cells floating around, Copilot will often say, I can't work with this. You have to formalize it first.
Okay, pivot tables are out, formal tables are in. One last thing in this section, web mode versus work mode.
Right, this is a toggle in the chat interface.
Yeah.
Work mode is all your internal stuff, intranet, SharePoint, emails. Web mode uses Bing to search the public internet.
Is web mode less secure? Because I'm searching the public web.
No,
That
is the trick question. Even in web mode, if you are logged in with your work account, commercial data protection applies.
What does that mean, practically?
It means Microsoft doesn't save your chat, and they don't use your queries to train the model. Even though you are searching the public web, your interaction with the AI remains private. It's just looking at a different library, the internet, instead of your intranet.
That's very reassuring. Okay, section five, agents. This feels like the new frontier.
It is. Agents are essentially custom versions of Copilot that you can tailor for specific tasks. For the exam, you need to know how they are constructed. And again, no coding required.
So what are the components of an agent? What do I need to build one?
You need a name, a description, and an icon. Then you need the instructions, that's the brain, where you tell it you are a helpful assistant to. Then you need knowledge sources, and finally suggested prompts, those little starter bubbles.
Knowledge sources, is there a limit on that?
20.
Yeah.
Currently, you can add up to 20 files or sources to a single agent. Memorize that number.
20 sources, got it. Now, there are two pre-built agents that came up in the sources, the analyst and the researcher. They sound almost identical.
They do, but they are functionally opposite. You have to distinguish them.
Break it down for me.
The researcher agent is all about unstructured data and synthesis. Think of it as a librarian or a strategist. You give it 10 PDS reports on market trends and you say, tell me the overall strategy. It reads text, it synthesizes concepts, and it gives you a summary.
Okay, and the analyst?
The analyst agent is about structured data and numbers. It often uses a code interpreter in the background. Think, look at this Excel sheet and find the sales anomaly. Or create a visualization from this data set.
So researcher equals strategy and words. Analyst equals numbers and patterns.
Perfect. If the scenario says, find the average revenue decline from this data set, you choose analyst. If it says, summarize the competitor's new sustainability policy, you choose researcher.
What about sharing these agents? If I build an agent that knows all about the payroll database and I share it with you, do you suddenly get access to everyone's salary?
No, absolutely not. And this is a huge security concept for the exam. Sharing an agent does not share the permissions. The agent is just a tool. It's a lens. If I give you the lens, but you don't have the key to the room, the file access, the lens is useless. The agent will just tell you, I can't access that information.
So the permissions travel with the user, not the agent.
Exactly.
All right, final section. Specialized experiences. We have pages and we have notebooks. I'll be honest, I confuse these two all the time.
You are not alone. The sources highlight this as one of the trickiest parts for a lot of people. Here is the mental model to use. Pages is multiplayer. Notebooks is single player.
Okay, tell me more.
Copilot Pages is built on Microsoft Loop. It's designed for synchronous, real-time collaboration. Imagine we are in a meeting and we want to brainstorm a launch plan together. We open a page. We can both edit it, Copilot can add to it. We can see each other's cursors moving. It's a durable, shared canvas.
So the keywords for pages are meeting, collaboration, real-time, loop.
Yes. Now, Copilot Notebooks. This is an asynchronous sandbox. It is designed for prompt engineering. It supports multi-turn refinement. You type a prompt, you get a result, you don't quite like it. You go back, you tweak the prompt, you run it again and again and again.
And it allows for that iteration without cluttering up a chat history with 100 tries.
Exactly. It's for deep analysis or for a single user to work on a complex problem before sharing the final result. It is not for quick back and forth chat interactions.
So if the question asks about collaborating with a team to draft a proposal in real time, the answer is pages.
Pages. If the question asks about refining a complex prompt to generate a specific marketing tagline through multiple iterations, the answer is notebooks.
That distinction is crystal clear now. Multiplayer versus single player sandbox.
And one more thing on notebooks. The prompt limit is much higher. You can paste in way more text into a notebook than a standard chat. It's built for that heavy lifting.
Good to know. We are cruising through this. We've covered the fundamentals, the prompting, the red zones, the agents, and the experiences. We are approaching the end of our CRAM session.
But we cannot leave without talking about the preparation strategy. One of our sources gave a piece of advice that I think is absolute gold.
The 1 hour rule.
Yes. The advice is spend 1 hour manually clicking through every single action in the study guide.
Don't just read save a prompt, actually go into Copilot Lab and click the bookmark icon yourself.
Exactly, because the exam will ask, where's the button? Is it in the top right? Is it under a three-dot menu? Is it called save or bookmark or add to collection?
Visual memory, back to where I started.
Yes. Do not just conceptualize it, do it. Create an agent, rename a chat, delete a chat, see what the pop-up says. That visual familiarity is what separates a pass from a fail on these nitpicky questions.
And what's the final mindset check when I'm sitting there staring at a question and I have absolutely no idea what the answer is? What is my North Star?
When in doubt, choose the answer that respects security and human responsibility. If an option implies Copilot does something automatically without human review, it's probably wrong. If an option implies Copilot bypasses a restriction for the sake of convenience, it is definitely wrong.
Copilot is an assistant, not a manager.
Precisely. It drafts, you review, it suggests, you decide. It reads, but only what you are allowed to read.
This has been an absolute whirlwind tour of the AB 730. I feel like I just downloaded the study guide directly into my brain.
That was the goal. Remember, 45 minutes, 40 to 60 questions, read the context, watch out for the red zone limitations, and remember the difference between pages and notebooks.
You got this. Go crush that exam, get that badge, and then come back and tell us how it went.
And here's a final provocative thought to leave you with as you walk into that testing center. We talked about how Copilot can't do certain things today, like create pivot tables. But this technology changes, I mean, weekly. The exam is a snapshot of a specific moment in time. So trust your study of the principles, because the features will change, but the principles of security and responsibility, those are forever.
Ooh, that is deep. Good luck, everyone.
Good luck.
See you in the next deep dive.